Blog Talk Radio.
Show. I'm Don Allen. Over at Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you doing tonight on this beautiful evening?
Well, Don, you know, looking out the window, it's starting to change. The clouds are starting to come over. The temperature's kind of dropping. Just came back off the course. It's going to be a little cool tonight. But we had a beautiful day here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis and St. Paul. Could have been about 7 or 8 degrees warmer, if you know what I mean. Of course, it's warm enough around here, if you know what I mean. But anyways, it's a beautiful, beautiful day, and we should just be appreciative, if you know what I mean. So what more can I say? Hey, Don, I understand you were at the insulation last night. Were you appointed to any committee or asked to serve? Or tell us a little bit about the NAACP, man.
Well, I didn't stay the whole time, Mr. Edwards, because I just listened to the beginning and just see, you know, what they were going for, and I just decided to leave, but I was, you know, I just, you know, some of the comments at this point, I'm totally over that whole thing, and hopefully, you know, and sometimes you have to sit back and watch things, and this is gonna be very interesting. It's just with the I see a few people that were gonna fly pretty quick, and. Mm-hmm. And I'm just kind of watching it. But, you know, I had this thing lined up that I was going to do here, Mr. Edwards, but I said I'm going to save it for later on because it's pretty funny. It's a report on the chairs at the NAACP Minneapolis installation meeting. So branch installation. And I will do that a little bit later here in the show, but it's pretty good.
You're talking about the 17 committee chairs?
Yes.
Oh, man,
it's the chairs they were sitting on. So it's kind of secure.
They were sitting on. That's mean.
Anyway, moving right along. There's a lot of strange stuff, you know, going on with that. And I'm looking at, you know, just to kind of see how it's going to turn out. You know, I am a card-carrying member of the Minneapolis NAACP in good standing, and I do expect to get email notifications and things like that. And, you know, they had about, 30, 40 people there last night. And, you know, it was just very interesting. There's some different dynamics in the room. You have some guys cheerleading. For the women, I had this long Facebook conversation with a gentleman, a fellow veteran who was upset because I didn't agree to support these women. And it was very interesting, Mr. Edwards, because it's like, you need to stop. He was telling me, you need to stop attacking them. Stop. I said, wait a minute. So if I report news and ask a question, a legitimate question, I'm attacking?
Yeah.
You'd rather have
that shows a little bit of shallowness, as far as I can see. That seems to be a little bit of intellectual shallowness there by saying that, you know.
I mean, when it started.
Yeah, I don't quite understand that. But here's the thing I'm puzzled about, Mr. Allen. The phone lines are open. Hey, we have our program tonight, taking a look at civil rights organizations, taking a look at what we are understanding will probably be the agenda. 17 committees formed last night, if you will, etc. But what I'm trying to make sure that we see is they'll come out of the chute rolling, if you will. So. Is there an address or a phone number so we can let our listening audience here in the Twin Cities and the state of Minnesota know how they can contact the leadership and the new dynamics, if you will, of the NAACP? Do we have a number, a phone number? I'm not talking about, you know, a website, because, you know, 70% of African Americans don't have computer capabilities. So is there a phone number, an office number, where we can stop by, and if we have to bring some black citizens in who want to file some kind of complaint, is there an address?
Yeah, I have not heard of an address or a phone number or anything like that as yet. I understand they are working on a website, but like you said, that's inconsequential at this point, because people don't really have access, and who's going to man it? I mean, that's going to take some serious doing to make that happen. I'm just, like I said, Mr. Edwards, at this point, I'm kind of over.
Okay.
All that.
Okay.
I'm just kind of watch. You got to watch. Sometimes you got to sit back and watch. And that's what I'm doing.
Well, here's what I tend to do. I'm not over it to the extent of I'm looking forward to what they say they're going to be doing. Now, I understand, you know, quite a bit of discussion about dealing with the police, if you will, you know, kind of talking as if they're in Baltimore or Cleveland or, you know, St. Louis, Ferguson, or whatever. So I'm trying to get a feel of how they're going to roll up on the MPD and the sheriff, if you will. I understand there's some dissatisfaction or some statements about Sheriff Richard Stanek, which, you know, that's interesting. But here's what I'm a little bit uneasy about as a longtime observer at court, if you will, or in the case of the mindset of the NAACP's leadership at trial, if you know what I mean. The real problem looks like it's really going to come from the Federation. Are you hearing anything? Or was there any discussion during the brief time you were there about how they're going to handle the leadership of the Federation? Leadership that referred to the current sitting 5th Congressional Congressman Keith Ellison as a Muslim terrorist about six years ago?
I remember that.
Should we be concerned about that in community, or should we just look past that?
Well, I think that we should be concerned about that, Mr. Edwards, but, you know, everyone has their own agenda. And so the agenda for this group is unclear. I mean, they say they want to do the police brutality piece, but, you know, maybe if more people were working, you really wouldn't have to worry about the police brutality stuff. You know, if more people had jobs, if the young people were getting education. I mean, there's other ways you can go to solve other problems. If you have a cold, drink some hot tea, you know.
Let me ask this question. Because I've got a number of things running around in my mind. Again, the phone lines are open. You know, someone, if anybody chooses. Congratulated you folk at Hamlin, because there is an African-American president, you know, coming in. Is that correct? At the end
of... That is correct.
Is it
July
June?
1st. July 1st, actually.
July 1st. Okay, just before Independence Day. Now, should we be expecting that the incoming president will be one of the first guests at the, let's say, the August meeting of the NAACP to take a look at what the new incoming president who comes to us from, is it New Hampshire or Vermont?
Vermont, sir.
Uh-huh.
Vermont.
And wouldn't that be a nice thing? I mean, you know, the sisterhood thing that everybody's talking about. I was just looking again at the copy of the Spokesman Recorder last week, and the lovely ladies after being elected, and then they had a photo op picture. So should we not be looking forward to them? Because I heard there's conversations about that, you know, they're going to make even the political office holders, I guess that means like Commissioner Tony, really not anybody really on this side, and Representative Doran in St. Paul. So can we look forward? Can we encourage the NAACP to have as their guest, let's say, in the month of August, this very dynamic president of Hamlin University?
Well, Mr. Edwards, I have to pump my brakes a little on that, because I have some concerns. As a student at Hamlin, as a loyal Piper, and as a trusted leader in the Veterans Organization and other areas of the school, I would hope that this new president, or if I caught wind of it, it would be my duty to advise her of the significance of doing this or not doing this. Okay?
Okay.
She has a college, a whole university that she's responsible for, a law school partnership. That school cannot afford any negativity from the white infrastructure, the board of trustees, you know, those types of people who are still in charge, basically, who reflect negatively on our president's leadership. Plus, she's smarter than that, Mr. Edwards. And,
well, but Don,
you know,
Don, we seem to be at loggerheads here, Ted, because all I'm suggesting is that we're hearing about this is a new day, this is a new coming, if you will. Women have taken the mantle of leadership and et cetera, that the black males have in significant numbers failed the tasks. And here we have a historical event taking place in our beloved Twin Cities, and that is a African-American female, dynamic credentials, by the way, who is coming to us from New England and is going to be taking over as the new head of Hamline University. And you know, you touched on a couple things there, Don. I mean, Hamline has an outstanding law school, just like the University of Minnesota and William Mitchell and also St. Thomas. And, I mean, it just seemed to me that they would want to reach out because she would bring a prospectus, if you will, of some of the problems that she has encountered. If you look at her resume, if you will, you know, it is dynamic. I was just making a suggestion to my colleague from the right that this would be a golden opportunity for the leadership, the ladies, to show us how they are on top of their game. Let me just say this. One of the things, certainly I'm quite sure they'd be wanting to talk about, is the issue, and I noticed that the incoming leadership of the NAACP kind of stays away from that. I noticed we don't hear a lot of discussion about diversity and equity in the corridors of power of our institutions, be it Hamline or Bethel or, you know, Gus Davis, Adolphus, Mankato State, and certainly the great University of Minnesota. I don't hear a lot of discussion about that, Don. And, and what I was thinking, this would be a golden opportunity as an example to begin a program of significant initiative. Like, let's say St. Thomas, okay? I assume that St. Thomas has one of the highest percentage of African Americans in academia as full tenured professors, adjunct professors, administrators, and et cetera, right?
St. Thomas.
Are you still there? Still with me?
Yeah, I'm here. I was choking a little bit, Mr. Edwards, because I'd be really honest with you. After walking and being admitted to St. Thomas and declining my admission, St. Thomas is whiter than Hamline.
What?
Yes, absolutely.
Don, we're talking about the doctrine and the symbol of not only the Black Lives Matter, but black presence is extremely welcome and relevant. So, wait a minute. I mean, we're talking about people who've had a presence at St. Thomas as an example for over half a decade, since 2003, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And so I'm not understanding. Maybe you're just being a little biased from the right
to... And maybe I am, Mr. Edwards, and maybe I've seen one area, but that one area scared the hell out of me. And, you know, I should not, as a African-American professional, a graduate student, I should not be in the room with 20 white women, two white dudes, and I'm the only black male.
Well, wait a minute. Now, this happened where, Donald? I mean, where did this happen?
Downtown, University of St. Thomas, for assessment one, for the Masters of Arts and Teaching.
I would assume that you must be talking about Morehead State or Crookston, if you will, or Marshall, State down there in Marshall. But, I mean, you couldn't be talking about St. Thomas.
I'm talking about St. Thomas, downtown Minneapolis, in Opus Hall, second floor for the assessment one. And that reality, Mr. Edwards, shocked the hell out of me, because I said, okay, I'm over at Hamline. I want to finish up in St. Thomas. Two private schools, prestigious. It would look good on the resume. And I walked into this, just this cloud. This I couldn't.
Wait, John. I just have to take exception. I mean, I'm quite sure that the new incoming president of the NAACP and her surrounding support group, I know that they have been fighting the battles, and I just know that the president, the new incoming president of the NAACP of Minneapolis, though, St. Thomas, well, St. Thomas is in both cities now, Minneapolis and St. Paul, and, of course, St. Thomas had a capital improvement program. They, they built some real nice facilities in downtown Minneapolis, and they, I just realized one of the things that they didn't do, and a very good friend of the current NAACP president who also serves on the advisory committee to the United States Civil Rights Commission. In fact, they had a meeting down there talking about in one of those new buildings that St. Thomas built in downtown Minneapolis. But you know that St. Thomas was a total failure in diversity and in the construction of their downtown campus?
Well, absolutely. I actually remember that. And Ms. Harris, all I know is that I went there, I saw something that just sent up some ugly signals, and every office that I went in, there was a white woman with a computer. Now, there was one black woman that I originally met, but she basically answered the phone and guided you to someone else. And I said, okay, this is problematic. At least at Hamline, I could pitch a fit and say, hey, this needs to be changed, and something would happen. Okay. Here over there at St. Thomas with no clout, I just have to look and wonder. I'm saying, okay, you got people that work here that are out in the streets talking about Black Lives Matter, equity, civil rights, fairness, jobs, economic development, but their backyard is a white lily field. Okay?
Well, I just... say, because I just assume that there was a very significant program and momentum at St. Thomas to certainly better integrate that institution, certainly one of the more endowed universities in the state of Minnesota. When I say endowed, I'm talking about their contributors, donors, and endowment fund, and et cetera. And let me say this, because you've been on the campus of St. Thomas. I mean, I don't want to put you on the spot, and you've been on the campus of Hamline. You've also been on the campus of the University of Minnesota, and et cetera. What does it look like, the configuration of black academicians, if you will, at St. Thomas? I mean, and heading up departments and things like that. What does that look, pretty good?
It's pretty good if you don't look like us. I was over at the St. Paul campus, which is historic and huge, and I really looked hard before I saw two black women, two black people, period, or two African-American women. And now you'll see more students of color and things like that downtown, but I really don't know, what's going on there besides the engagement that I had that kind of pushed me back 100 feet and just said, we don't want to do that here because I'm thinking too, Mr. Edwards, okay, I'm thinking like you're thinking. I'm saying, okay, this president of this civil rights organization is down here at this university. This university has to be hip. They got to be, in lockstep with the brothers and sisters. You can get stuff done. You can do what you need to do. They look you as a whole person. I went down there and just got my boot took off and smacked all in the face. And that wasn't the case.
Wow. Well, I guess we'll be told by different members of the NAACP Executive Committee that we shouldn't be talking about this because this is negative, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the inclusion of African Americans, of black Americans in higher academia, if you will. I didn't mean to get anything started, but see, I well remember the controversy when St. Thomas was doing its construction in downtown Minneapolis as they were building their downtown campus over a decade ago. And I remember the discussions, and at that time, there were a couple different civil rights leaders in the department, but as St. Thomas came down the stretch, Velma Corvell, who is a member of the advisory committee to the powerful United States Civil Rights Commission, in which our NAACP president is also the chairwoman of, or certainly was, last time we checked with the regional office in Chicago. So, but anyway, hey, we want to be fair, man. The phone line is open. Maybe we can get some alumni, you know, a graduate of St. Thomas, who will want to tell us how well things are going over there. But just before they call, let me kind of give them a hint of how we will vet them, if you will. You know, we want to be taking a look at how many African-Americans are heading up departments, if you will, how many are full-tenured professors. I mean, we kind of know what that means, Don. I mean, I know I'm not the brightest guy in the universe, but I kind of know what it is to be tenured. I remember the controversy for years over at McAllister. McAllister used to talk in grand style about, you know, his commitment to diversity, and back in those days was integration and et cetera. And I remember some controversy came up as it pertains to the people who are some of the most significant contributors and donors to McAllister, and folks got to looking, and it got real embarrassing because it looked like some folks were playing a role over there of keeping black people out of the positions of significant authority power, you know, department heads, full professors, full tenure, that kind of thing. So I don't want to step on anybody's toes. But it was a question that was posed to me by someone who is affiliated with the United States Civil Rights Commission in Washington. And they were talking about the annual report, or the absence of an annual report here from the advisory committee to the United States Civil Rights Commission in Washington. And I said, I can't imagine that there would not be a timely report. It's kind of like the first quarter report from the Civil Rights Department on how much success we're having, how many black people are being employed, et cetera, has not come before a Blong Yang's committee in the Minneapolis City Council. And, you know, folks kind of getting a little worried, you know, why these reports are already always running way behind, if you will, so you really can't have an intelligent discussion. But I was telling the folks at the United States Commission on Civil Rights that I just couldn't believe. So I called Chicago and called the regional office of the United States Civil Rights Commission, and they didn't have it on file, Don. Maybe we could check on the computers, because my associate, Mr. Allen, is a good computer person. Maybe we can find out when the most recent report was filed by the advisory committee to the United States Civil Rights Commission. Because one of the categories they'd be talking about as part of their mandate is the diversity of the institutions of higher education and higher learning, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I bet you that's where it's at. So, you know, maybe even if we get a phone call, you could maybe check the big computer, and we could call up that report, take a look at what St. Thomas, Augsburg, and Hamlin, and McAllister, you know what I'm saying, and looks like what they look like, and then we can get a pretty good idea, and particularly University of Minnesota, who's carrying on the fight, carrying on the battle. You know,
well
I want to be.
Go ahead.
Go right ahead.
No, I just have a quick, you know, a quick summary that should explain it all to you, Mr. Edwards. The annual budget of University of St. Thomas is $203 million. But let's look
how much
up now? Here. $203 million. Students of color are 14% of the undergraduates. And 17% of the graduate population.
All right, then. All right.
So there's 51% men and 49% women in the undergraduate. And so that's their totals there. And so, I mean,
because we don't want them to say that we're being, you know, we're playing dirty. So what does it say in the category dealing with staff, tenure, and et cetera? So what are we looking at? 18, 19% African-Americans, tenured staff on the faculty?
It does not have.
It does not break it down that far, but what it does say is they have 454 full-time faculty and 525 part-time faculty and 1,041 staff for a total of 1,920. So
okay.
There is
1,920. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they do not break it down any further than that. But wait, let me click on diversity. Okay, I guess not. Let me just see what it says here. Commitment to diversity. Let's just.
Because we know everybody's committed to diversity, because that's a part of why the presence of black people matters. And not only Black Lives Matter, but it's just the presence and the opportunity for black people to further and enhance their and improve on their conditions of life, if you will. I mean, I'm just assuming, maybe you shouldn't always assume, but I'm just assuming from based on what we've been hearing, what I heard coming out of the meeting last night, et cetera, that the NAACP leadership is going to take a look at those entities, institutions, and et cetera, that are not doing their fair share. And that, man, we're going to see some rocking and rolling. And, you know, if for a person that holds a position as a special advisor to the United States Civil Rights Commission, which has a subpoena authority and et cetera, I mean, we can now really see some doors swinging open, you know. Now, I know that that last year there was a letter sent to the governor in anticipation that the new leadership was getting ready to come in. And I know they asked Governor Mark Dayton, well, they demanded that he set aside $1 million for their group, whatever their group was. Did that ever happen? Does anybody know if that ever happened?
I don't know. But, you know, again, our phone lines are open. That number is 347-426-3904. Mr. Edwards, I think we might have a caller. Stand by.
Let's get a caller. Let's get in there. We're talking about the diversity and et cetera. Yeah, get it. You handle the caller, Don. Let's get the caller in.
Who's on the line? Would you like to say your name, where you're calling from? They just want to be in the queue. They're nervous. Well, they're nervous. Come on. You know, I just want to let our listeners know, when you call from a block number, it shows up 111-111-1111. Okay? You're on the line. Trust me. You're there. And I can flip a switch and see who you are. So just, you know, you might as well just call and ask your question and then hang up the phone or whatever.
Well,
so.
But I don't even want us to even imply that we're getting anything negative. We're talking about opportunities here.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about the battle that they will continuously and consistently be fought. It has to be fought. And now we have dynamic new leadership of the NAACP, if you will, now putting together the juggernaut, starting with the state conference under the leadership of W.C. Jordan down there in Rochester, Claudel Washington, the Papa Doc of presidents of the NAACP movement. That means president for life kind of thing. We've got Jeffrey Martin over there in St. Paul, assistant city attorney over there, who I think he played a rather interesting role in that incident over there where the young African-American was roughed up by the police in the Skyway that kind of went national and viral and et cetera. But anyways, I mean, with this dynamic leadership coming in, man, I'm looking for some heck of a movement. And right now we've kind of put the spotlight on probably one of the most important institutions in the American society, and that is the institutions of higher learning. And, you know, I just asked my associate, Mr. Allen, over the last 12, 13, 14 minutes, this kind of a series of questions. I'm just trying to get a feel. I'm not a well-educated individual and et cetera. And, you know, I don't have a chance to hang out around the college or the institutions and et cetera. My matriculation ended with the University of Syracuse in the 60s. But anyways, you know, I've been watching for a number of years, if you will, and there have been occasions where my role as a – see, here's where I come from, Don. I have sat as a chairperson of a civil rights commission, in this case the Minneapolis Civil Rights Commission, and the record speaks for itself, so I don't need anybody to call and tell me and ask me some questions. It's all there in the archives. It will be at the Star Tribune of the city of Minneapolis. And I got to tell you, man, when you sit in a position, particularly when we had subpoena power back in the day,
mm-hmm.
to be in the position of the catbird seat, we were able to do a lot of things in the 60s and to the early 70s when the Minneapolis City Council took our subpoena authority away because we were getting a little bit carried away as far as they were concerned with opening the doors of opportunity for the sons and daughters of the Africans. So it's not like I haven't been there. And also, you know, as you and I have talked about, I served for 11 years as a special representative of the federal court in the integration of the Minneapolis Fire Department, you know what I mean? Went to court and battled the city of Minneapolis in an attempt to put the Minneapolis Police Department in 1981 under federal receivership. So I just want to be clear that, you know, we've been there. And my associate, Mr. Allen, has been involved. He's of a different millennium, if you will, but it's not like we haven't been out there and seen the battles and seen the fights. And so that is the genesis to our listening audience for this kind of discussion because, you know, I'm just looking forward to what's going to be happening, what is needed for a community that is in a bad shape, if you will. And I just don't need to have a lot of conversation about, you know, marches and talking. I mean, I'm looking to see some action. I'm looking to see them roll up. I'm hearing conversation about that they're going to go over and they're going to confront Governor Mark Dayton and they're going to tell him what it is that they want, and that's great. And if they get the authorization from the national office of the NAACP, in particular our good friend, Reverend Gail Ford, and the national board of the NAACP, I'm quite sure they can, you know, they can do those things. But see, we don't make the mistake here on Donnie and Ronnie in not laying it out in advance, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because if we talked about it a year from now, everybody would say, well, you guys should have said something about that when they were first elected. Would you agree, Don?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, I know you must be getting some text messages and things there, but I repeat again. I don't want to be caught in a situation where someone says, well, why don't you guys say something in 2015? You know, now you're talking about it, you know, if you're so concerned. Well, I am concerned. And so I'm just kind of laying it out right now, some narratives and some things that can be done, if you will. I mean, wow, 17 committees. Oh, by the way, we have a committee to Black Museum money, you know. Now, let me just ask a question, Don. Are we ever going to get a report on what happened to the original Black Museum money, the $3
million? You know, that would be nice to get that report. That'd be really nice because I would like, I mean, I think that's one of the many things, Mr. Edwards, that's kind of bugging me. You ask them mm-hmm. about questions that, you know, white folks would answer, and you're attacking them. You're bashing them. You're doing
this, doing that.
I'm like, oh, come on. Get off your high horse. Answer the damn question. Okay? If they could have something legitimate, you know, I don't care if they drunk it up, smoked it up, you know, licked it up, whatever. Come on with it. Let's hear what happened to it. Let's hear why we do not have an African-American museum with $3 million in hand. Okay?
Well, here's the reason I also asked that question, because we want to be as transparent and as current. Radio program the other morning on radio station KMOJ, and mm-hmm. a gentleman was on the air from 9 to 10 a.m. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Allen, my colleague, called in and asked a question and said almost the same thing that he just said just now.
Mm-hmm.
But the question was about the foundation of the money. And the gentleman, whoever the gentleman was that was hosting, whatever it was that they were hosting, made a number of misstatements as if the foundation has never received any money. And I know there's a woman by the name of Dorothy Bridges, who is the vice president of the Federal Reserve of the United States, or in this case, Federal Reserve in Minnesota, who I know would take great exception to that. And I know that there are some others that would take great exception. And I know my good friend Peter McLaughlin, who sits on the board as a county commissioner, really went out on the limb for that $1 million that came from the state through the county a couple years ago and cannot be accounted for. So we're really asking questions that have already been documented. In fact, some of those issues were in the court case and the actions that was brought against the the foundation. Now, I assume with asking for new funding, I assume that, and maybe one of the callers that are listening can give us a call and, you know, go on the air and just kind of give us an update. I assume that the $800,000 indebtedness has been settled with the construction company.
Well, Mr. Edwards, I'm actually looking at the State of Minnesota Hennepin County Manor Electric Plaintiff versus Minnesota African American Museum Cultural Center, Carl and Eloise Polad Family Foundation, NASIF Plumbing and Heating, doing business as NASIF Mechanical Contractors, Horwitz Incorporated, doing business as Horwitz NSI, Knutson Contract Construction Services, and John Doe, Mary Rose, ABC Partnership, and XYZ Corp. That's how you get everybody. And this was filed in district court here last year. It looks like, I'll look for the date, but it's the case of, let me just go back in here. Manor Corporation organized pursuant to the action foreclosed a mechanic lien on the following real property situated in Hennepin County, the state, which is the museum. They put a lien on the museum and said that information, upon information and belief, ma'am is the record owner of the property, which it was. And I'm trying to get to the good part here. Foreclosure of mechanic lien. That's not what I want. I'm looking
Ooh,
for
Don, you're coming through. You're bad. You may want to check your frequency.
Okay, this
there.
Should be a little bit better. Sorry about that.
Oh,
yeah,
that's
I, was looking,
yeah,
I have my head down looking at this paper.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. Okay, because we don't want to say that, you know, that we were intentionally garbling the message. So
yeah,
this was a lawsuit. This was brought by the museum against Knutson, or was it brought by Knutson against the museum? I mean, we want to be fair and transparent.
This was brought by Manor Electric against the museum, asking for an order and judgment in favor of the plaintiff, Manor, against MAM in the amount of $129,000, less the amount of any net proceeds received by Manor from the sale of the property as aforesaid, if any, plus interest, costs, attorney fees allowed by law. So basically, they want to get paid.
And MAM, by the way, is the Minnesota Museum. Because we've said MAM a number of times. That's the kind of the abbreviation for the Minnesota Black Museum, right? Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So, what the museum didn't pay a couple thousand dollars in bills or something? I mean, with $3 million in hand. I mean, you know, maybe just a secretary or something just missed a bill invoice or something. I mean, we're not talking about a lot of money. How much money are we talking about here, Don?
Well, Mr. Edwards, I need to read this again to you and read it slow. And I know you'll get what it says here. Number four, order and judgment in favor of the plaintiff, Manor, against MAM in the amount of $129,000 less the amount of any net proceeds received by Manor for the sale of the property. For the sale of the property, as for said, if any, plus interest, costs, attorney fees allowed by law.
Okay.
So,
well, now where did the number of $800,000 come from? Oh, that was Knutson, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So,
the company Mara, they're a firm out in where they are, Lester Plurie or somewhere like that.
Yeah, they are. They're way out, but.
It wasn't a black company like Thor or Tri Construction, right? Because I know they must have had a number of black contractors working on the rehabbing of the museum, right?
Yeah. Ronnie, if you're listening, call in and talk to us about that. I think he might be listening. He worked there. He's an African-American going to school downtown that never got paid and working on the museum. And so this was filed December 13th. And Mr. Edwards, we have a few callers, so I need to start rolling them in here. We'll start with...
Okay, let's do it. Let's bring them on.
Yeah,
the board. Okay.
First one, Mr. Nelson, welcome to Blog Talk Radio. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How about you guys tonight?
I'm good.
Fine,
I'm
Mr.
good.
Nelson. How are you doing? We're
not too
talking bad. A little bit about the plan of action of the Minneapolis NAACP, and in the course of that, we were talking about that one of the committees formed last night, according to media sources was the committee on the creation of a museum. I guess the NAACP is going to go into the museum business. So I, you know, like an idiot, was asking Mr. Allen what happened to the $3 million for the museum a couple of years ago. And Mr. Allen just kind of blindsided me, and he read this court document of December 2014. Where there was a judgment
September
against,
2013, yeah.
So anyways, Mr. Nelson, welcome, and what's your thoughts?
You know, I think you guys are number one hitting the nail on the head. I think that, number one, that was kind of my primary question a couple of weeks ago, was what is the, quote, leader of the NAACP going to do about the African American Museum? I think right now, though, she's a bit preoccupied with trying to infuse radical Black Lives Matter with this prestigious entity like NAACP. So I don't think that the museum will garner the type of attention that is needed from the president. So sadly enough, I don't think that it will be erected under her watch or anytime soon, which is sad because, again, this is what I would think all leadership, and she should be the one rallying the leadership to enact, you know, to help erect this museum that's had funds already allocated to it, and obviously the right thing has not been done by it. And, you know, when it comes to wanting accountability, we definitely can't ask Ms. Pounds for that because she likes to duck and run and insult you when you ask her serious questions. So I don't think that we'll get the correct questions answered that we need to.
Well, wait a minute, Nelson. I have to take a little exception. Now, you mean to say that Ms. Levy Pounds, president of the NAACP, you mean as an attorney and a professor of law, she doesn't have an understanding of situations in which you don't pay your obligation and pay your bills?
Well, you know, I mean, isn't that strange, Mr. Edwards? I mean, who would have thought something like that? But again,
that's what I'm saying. that's why I was so stunned when my associate, Mr. Allen, just blindsided me with this court order and this claim by a small white contractor way out in Lester Prairie, Minnesota. I'm sure glad none of the black contractors who worked on the museum, I'm sure glad they didn't sue, right? Don?
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Will Ms. Pounds be on the forefront of having minority contracts erect this museum? Will she be at the forefront of making sure that there's accountability for not only the money that was already allocated, which I'm sure she'll say she had nothing to do with, but still there should be accountability for that monies too? Or will she be at the forefront of the new monies that she is going to be responsible for trying to acquire for this new museum? Again, I think the lady is all smoke and mirrors. I don't believe anything she says. I don't think that she'll get much done. But, you know, I guess I'm trying to be optimistic. I'm trying to be have hope and be black and optimistic, but I highly doubt that anything gets done with this lady in charge.
You want some change. You want some change. You might just get your dollar back. Okay. I'll put you back in the queue. M calling in. Hello, sir. How are you tonight?
Well, gentlemen, I'm doing very good.
Okay.
And yourselves. Hope you're doing
Yes, we are. You're live.
Oh,
here.
Yes. Go ahead, M, your observation. We're just kind of talking a little bit about the new dynamics that are in play here and the kind of things going to happen. They had the installment, the installation, if you will, last night at our North Point. I sure didn't want to come close there. I didn't want the executive director to call the police on me again without
legal cause.
You had
been escorted out previously.
Black man get kind of nervous when, you know, all them guns, show up and they walk you out the door. You know, I know some of the NAACP Z committee members have been saying I should have just left. I'm like, wow, well, why didn't you just leave MOA? I mean, you understand. I mean, it begins to get into that kind of back and forth. You know what I'm saying? But in the case of what happened in MOA, they were given fair notice that they were going to be trespassed. You know, nobody told me. I know they had been talking and planning to make sure that something happened to me. But anyways, I want to leave that alone because that's kind of a personal thing, you know. And, you know, black man understands and realizes that his black life isn't that important.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny, Mr. Edwards, as you know, make those last statements. It's kind of hitting on kind of where I'm at as I listen to the state of affairs of this Twin Cities. As you know, I've said many times, the Twin Cities that I used to live in. The current state of affairs, I think the reality is, and I think, gentlemen, you know, you tend to say it week in, week out without actually saying it, but the African American in this city, in this state, has become passé. I think that's, you know, what we have to come face to face with. I mean, we look at the news, you know, there used to be shows when I was a kid that would come on that were geared toward the African American community. And these shows were on, you know, the four channels that we had in those days, you know, 4, 5, 11, 9. They
that's
have
right,
shows on, oh, Harambe, which dealt with
the fairs in the Twin Cities area
and, you know, had guests and had real discussion.
Mm-hmm.
About what was going on affecting the African American community, and now you turn on the news, you look at the papers, all you see the Somali. I saw and please don't think that I'm bashing anyone, because my belief is that no one person, I don't care what color you are, what you look like, how much money you have, nobody's better than the next person. I mean, that's my personal belief. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So I don't want that to skew the comments. But, you know, a big meeting, you know, with public officials or what have you about an apartment building, the Cedar Riverside apartment building. And they bring the owners into this apartment building, and the city councilman is there, and they're demanding, and the residents demand this, and they demand that, and they buckle to that. And I'm
mm-hmm.
like, well, That's a great thing, but what about those that have been here and fought for this country and been, again, for the African American? I don't see a reciprocal type of action. I see things like failed initiatives, like this African American museum that, I mean, people are picking over the bones of whatever it was or left now.
Mm-hmm.
Sad, sad, sad state of affairs, and our organizations don't seem to have the wherewithal and the gumption, you know, to stand up to the table and say, no, we want ours. We need ours. So I think we've become kind of a passé. I mean, we used to have national shows. Tony Brown's Black Journal would come on with information that would be cohesive messages that would affect the broader communities in the United States. But those things have just gone by the wayside.
Yes, they have, sir. Yes, they have. I think about a brother by the name of Jones, who, man, he was a fireball there on, if I'm not mistaken, it was Channel 5, and that brother laid it out, et cetera, and we had some other shows. You know, I can remember a time here when we had two very attractive African-American sisters were our weather girls, if you will.
Yeah, Tony Hughes was one.
Yes, and the other sister later became a nurse because the industry was closed off to her. In fact, I was looking at them in a book put out by a gentleman who put his heart and soul into putting out a black historical pictorial, if you will, so that, and I'm talking about going back into the 1940s and 50s. And, man, I used to remember the pride that we had in this community when those two young African-American women, very attractive, if you will, you know, came on, did the weather, and how proud we were. I remember when we had black anchors, like Grigsby at KSTP and a couple others. But, you know, we've basically been told we don't need that anymore. I guess, I mean, you know, somebody, leadership has accepted that, you know. Mr. Allen, some of that was just a tad before your time, and even Mr. Nelson's, per se. But Em and I remember those days. In fact, that's when Channel 11 was WTCN, right? WTCN, Channel 11.
Yep, I remember that. Roundhouse Rodney and Casey Jones and all them
boys.
Yes.
But
our community was more viable. I mean, now we've been really pushed. You know, nobody really has a foothold from an African-American perspective in the Twin Cities area in any way, shape, or form. I mean, I don't see any, you know, the organizations, you know, the NAACP, the Urban League, these things seem to just be, you know, I used the word earlier, passé, but, I mean, they just seem to just kind of be scrambling among themselves to get an order among themselves. It's kind of like a block club as opposed to something that really has an effect on the broader Twin Cities area. Maybe my perspective is skewed, gentlemen.
As a veteran myself of the civil rights conflict going actually back far back as 1958. I'm amazed at how we have shut down any discussion, expression of concern about the disappearance of black elected political leadership in this. I mean, you know, we have a black man as a congressman. That's great. But, you know, a little over a decade ago, we had two members of the city council because as it pertains to local business, that's where it's taken care of. And also, we have not taken exception to the fact that the Democratic Party, who we faithfully vote for and keep in office, has never encouraged any African-American. And I initially thought back, gentlemen, I mean, you'll understand, particularly him who knows the history of the city. I thought at one time, maybe 10, 12 years ago, that Bill Davis was being groomed to become a county commissioner as pertains to the politics of that particular day. I find it amazing that we do not take exception to the fact that that we have and never have had a African American even as a serious candidate for. I'm not talking about a couple of people that ran that clearly were doing it because they were just trying to get some money in their pocket. Mr. Allen, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm just puzzled. We don't seem to have any interest in challenging the status quo, the system, as you said, Em. We don't want to seem to offend our handlers, if you will, or their handlers, you know. We just want to be able to get along.
Yeah, it's such a sad thing because, you know, you mentioned, you know, individuals like Mr. Davis, and there are people like, oh, I don't know, Mr. Bell. I don't know if you recall such an individual. But they seem to be put up.
Oh, yes, definitely. Mm-hmm.
But they seem to be put up not by the community constituency, but by the powers that be that want to have their face out there and pull the strings. It's like a puppetation type of a thing. Is that a word?
Yes, puppeteer. Yes,
it's a word now. Yeah.
But they define people like that, and they put them up, and their hands are in their back. Cunningham is another name that kind of – I don't know them personally, but they don't seem – we can't seem as a community to put some candidate or to put – people that the masses are behind enough to gain strength. Does that make any sense, that theory
it does, if you know the history, the economy, and et cetera, of the city and et cetera. See, I still live that terrible situation when leadership 20 years ago, betrayed and stabbed the first African-American councilman, the late Van White, in the back in return for electing a Caucasian woman, if you will, and reversed everything. And then we held on to the seat in the 8th Ward until the councilman there wound up, unfortunately, going to jail. and for bribery, and we never recovered there. And it's just like, I don't know, that maybe we should not look that far ahead, that we should not exhibit those kinds of dreams, gentlemen. And so I guess we have to be dependent upon now organizations. By the way, Mr. Allen, is Mr. Gray, Scott Gray, still in the city? Is he still with us, or has he left with his Bush fellowship and gone on to Atlanta? Is he still around?
Do you know what? I tried to call his cell phone number, and I know that he was a little bit upset. And let me see if I can get in touch with him real quick. Yeah, no, he's still crying. He's not here.
That's another perfect example. This is a perfect example of individuals that have come in, they're put in situations, they put their time in, they're rewarded, and they're moved on, okay? They're able to move on to into that milieu that the puppetation, now that that's a word now, you know, they're able to move into that great beyond where we're still left holding the bag. You know, there's no one that really seems to really have, you know, from their heart and from, you know, a love of the community and their people to make things better. I mean, it's everybody's been bamboozled and hypnotized by the TV and all these accoutrements and playing with phones everywhere you go to. You can't stop looking at them things and punching and all that old foolishness. Oh. And they just can't keep focused on doing what needs to do. I mean, it really almost takes a person like my grandmother that, you know, if I was out here punching phones, she would knock me upside down. Don't put that thing down, boy. You got stuff to do.
Yeah, that's
the key. This is what we need.
You got stuff to do. Yeah.
This is what we need. So, gentlemen, I think I've had my say.
We appreciate you. We're coming up on the end of the program. We appreciate your observations and comments. And M periodically over the last couple of months has reminded us that there are a couple. Actually, you should be able to find it down at the library. If not, you probably need to stop by the offices of the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, the oldest black newspaper in Minnesota, because I like what they've been doing here the last couple of months, where they've gone back into their archives. And I was just in a discussion with the publisher 2 days ago, in which I was explaining how much I like some of the stories that they were pulling up as far back as 1937. And you know why, gentlemen, in closing? Because many of the things that the late Cecil Newman was reporting on in 1937, you know, that's like 78 years ago, are still happening. But at least in 1937, we had an economic base. Black people were being employed, even though we were still in the Depression and et cetera. Mm-hmm. We had businesses, black people. Oh, that's right. Black people were employing black people. I was asking my colleague, Mr. Allen, how many black people are working and in positions of power and authority at St. Thomas, as an example. We couldn't find any numbers, Jim. But anyway, appreciate you calling, man. And,
I will be calling back, and as you were saying.
You decide to call.
And as you're saying, books like the Centennial Edition of the Minneapolis Beacon, Minnesota's Black Community, the Minneapolis Negro Profile, they chronicle the, you know, what was going on in this city, and I think what could rise again if people can wake up.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Mr. Allen, we got a couple people. We appreciate Mr. Nelson, who is not afraid, as M is not, to express their observations. Particularly him, brings a historical perspective, which becomes a little dangerous for some of the folks, if you will. But, you know, phone lines are continuously open. You know, we don't drop calls and things like that like some folks do, if you will. But go ahead, Mr. Allen, any closing remarks? And if not, have James Brown bring us home.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be here next week.
Some say it's a lot of nerve.